Let's get to our guest. Daniel Lam is Head of Equity Strategy at Standard Chartered Wealth Management, joining us from our Hong Kong studio. So a lot to talk about in where opportunities are for investors in Asia. But let's start with the Fed, where they are expected to raise rates by 75 basis points this week. Is that priced in, and how do you, I guess, kind of hedge the Fed here?
Yeah, 75 bips is certainly been priced in by the market. And at this moment in time, if you look at the U.S. 10-year yield, it is at 3.5%. And at this moment, it seems that it is at a, you know, at a resistance level. Okay, so 3.5, you know, could be overshooting to 3.7. But it seems to be likely to be anchoring around these levels. So, you know, two ideas that we have for our investors. So one of them is DMIG corporate bonds, because they're yielding more than 5%. And if you look at how much they've been yielding over the last, you know, 7 to 8 years, it's been like 2.5%. So this is very attractive yield. You do need some defensive exposure. You do need to have some income carry to be able to combat markets like these. The other idea is high dividend equities globally, because if you look at times when US CPI is above 3%, global high dividend equities outperformed global equities by about 6%. They actually had an absolute return of about 4% positive versus global equities down 2% in those periods.
When do you expect that we could see a Fed pivot, and what will perform well in such an outcome?
Well, given the latest CPI print, that Fed pivot has been pushed, I guess, pushed back into the future. So we probably need to see a couple more prints that are below expectations for this pivot narrative to return. If that is the case, that the higher growth stocks would probably do very well in those environments, because you'll be expecting that the yields would be coming off, and that would help the valuation of those growth stocks.
All right, let's talk about Asia now. We did have that hot inflation read from Japan. Is it hot enough to move the dial, though, when it comes to the Bank of Japan?
Probably not. I think Japan really has a chronic disinflation issue. So they probably need to see a few prints like this before that bank BOJ consider, you know, possibly scaling back on the ultra-loose policy. So the dollar-yen is probably here to stay around these levels.
And we saw such big moves in dollar-yen and JGB futures last week as well. The 3.5% Treasury rate as well, how much does that kind of potentially have an impact on the BOJ decision when we're looking at this yield differential?
Well, I think at this moment in time, the Japan economy do need such weakness in the yen, okay? Because it does help the exporters. They are trying to boost up their tourism again. So, you know, of course, I think they would let the yen stay around these levels. I think unless they go above 150, they wouldn't be doing anything concrete.
A lot of this, as we know, with what's happening in dollar yen, is happening in EM currencies because of the strength of the dollar as well. We mentioned earlier we're waiting to see what the PBOC fix is today. How much of a guess is a stress that we could see 7.25 now?
7.25, I think that's certainly a possibility, because you do have, you know, the property issues looming at the China economy, and there are still a few weeks before the Congress at the end of October. So until then, I think, you know, big policies to stimulate the economy is probably unlikely.
Talking about the China Party Congress there, which is drawing closer, and we have seen Beijing step up efforts to ensure economic and market stability. But as Bloomberg News reports, one prominent player, the stock market's national team, has been missing. When do you think we could see some intervention there, and how much does the attractiveness of investing in China change after the Party Congress?
Well, I think the issues need to be addressed further, i.e. in the property market, right, for example. So we've seen measures such as, you know, lowering of down payment, easing for non-locals to be buying properties in different cities, etc., right? But the root cause of all these, I think, is probably needs to be addressed is the zero COVID policy, okay, because that's been causing much disruption in the economies. And the reason why we have that policy is because of the, I guess it's the healthcare system, right? The Chinese authorities need to be sure that there are enough people vaccinated before considering any steps contrary to that policy. So that needs to be stepped up. And if that is solved, the economy gradually normalizes, then we will see easing pressure across, you know, all the sectors. Until then, we're solving the symptoms rather than solving the root causes.
Yeah, it's a bit of a Band-Aid effect, if you will. But is there particular sectors that you think could be potentially affected here? I mean, regardless of what happens with the COVID zero policy, you've still got the property crisis that you alluded to earlier.
Yes. So in terms of sectors, of course, right now, the growth sectors are all hit because of the high yield across the entire world. So if inflation globally comes off, the yields come off, then those sectors, I think, are primed for a strong rebound. So that's the sector that one should be watching out for.
All right, the strong rebound there. Let's talk more broadly about what we're seeing across the Asia Pacific. It is a separate economy when you look at what's happening in the likes of Hong Kong, Taiwan, China, with a dynamic zero or COVID zero, however you want to put it. But the rest of Asia is very much coming back to life. You mentioned the potential tourism return to Japan too. Where do you see opportunity? Is it in Southeast Asia?
Southeast Asia or India? I mean, India is looking pretty good because the if you look at the data, coming up from India, retail sales actually booming, contrary to what we saw in China. And you do see that in terms of the property market is actually doing very well and supporting consumption as well. Everything loops together. If you have a good property market, consumption is there, and then everything just goes in a positive cycle. So India is looking pretty good to me.
We've been looking as well at green ESG investments, but the impact of the energy crisis, some saying, could potentially affect this. How closely are you looking at that, and not only how much of it's turning into a recessionary fear for Europe, but how it can affect investors as well when it comes to looking at ESG?
Energy crisis in Europe, I think the energy cap should be able to alleviate some of the pressure on the European consumers. Euro itself is actually at a very good support level at this moment in time. So any potential turn in the US inflation situations, i.e. any alleviation of the inflation, could be sending euro dollar higher. So Europe is, you know, its situation is not great, but you know, a lot of that has been priced in.
No, you go on. Continue.
Yep. In terms of ESG, again, a lot of these ESG names, they are looking at the future, right? So the valuation is, you know, at a relatively high level versus many other sectors or stocks. So again, it's really the yield that needs to come down before they can rally. So it's really a macro scenario here.
All right, but you do say you're cautious on energy stocks. Daniel, we thank you for your time. Daniel Lam is Head of Equity Strategy at Standard Chartered Wealth Management.